Welcome to Partnering Leadership, conversations with leading influencers in the greater Washington, D.C. region and global thought leaders, helping you align better with your purpose, grow professionally with meaning, and have a greater impact. For additional leadership insights and bonus content, visit us at partneringleadership.com. Now here's your host, Mahan Tavakoli.
Welcome to Partnering Leadership. I'm really excited this week to be welcoming Monsignor John Ensler, affectionately known as Father John. Father John is the president and CEO of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Washington. And annually, they help more than 120,000 people in the Washington metropolitan region. Father John has won numerous awards, primarily because of his leadership and his impact. He's also been recognized as Washingtonian of the Year. I really enjoyed the conversation because you can tell that even in serving the community, you need purpose-driven leadership in order to be able to achieve great results for the people you look to serve. I'm sure you will enjoy the conversation too. And I love hearing from you. Mahan@mahantavakoli.com. Keep your emails coming. Feel free to leave voice messages for me on partneringleadership.com. There's a microphone icon you can use for that on the website. Don't forget to follow the podcast. That way you will be sure to get notified of these episodes. On Tuesdays, conversations with magnificent changemakers like Father John from the greater Washington, D.C. DMV region. And then on Thursdays, with brilliant thought leaders, primarily leadership book authors, whose insights I believe can help all of us become more impactful leaders. And when you get a chance, for those of you that enjoy these on Apple, don't forget to leave a rating and review. That will help more people find and benefit from these conversations. Now, here's my conversation with Monsignor John Ensler. Monsignor John Ensler, welcome to Partnering Leadership. I'm thrilled to have you in this conversation with me.
I'm excited as well because I love thinking about what makes organizations and what makes churches and what makes neighborhoods work. It's always around leadership. Leadership, I think, is the key. I can tell you many churches and parishes where a leader was changed, moved to another place, and that particular parish went down, and where he went to starts going up. So there's some particular things that make you a leader. I love servant leadership most of all, but in saying that, basically, I love the fact that people are so responsive to me, I think, because I'm responsive to them. I think people respond to me because I always said yes, but to get to them. So it's a great journey where people are how to help each other do great things.
And that's why, Father John, you've had a significant impact in the greater Washington, D.C. region. And I want to capture some of your life story and some of your leadership journey in sharing with our audience. Now, I know you're a native Washingtonian. Our upbringing has a significant impact on who we become. So how did your upbringing impact the kind of person and the kind of leader you've become, Father John?
Well, I'm very blessed, Mahan. I'm very blessed because I'm one of 13 children. I have 8 sisters and 4 brothers. And my father died 66, very young, 76. My mom lived until she was about 79. But what they taught about love, what they taught about giving back, what they taught about welcoming people inclusion, it really impacted me. It impacts all of us. We have a great time once a month, a Zoom call with all 13 of us. And we do it usually 7 o'clock at night. Some people are in Dallas, some people are in Carolina, some people are in Arizona, but we have a great time. And that family continues to be a stalwart supporter to me. I learned so much from them, and I hope they listen to me as well. So that's important. I grew up in Catholic schools, and I went to Lady Lord School, Bethesda, where I actually grew up at St. John's College High School, my alma mater there. And I went out to Iowa for college. My dad's from Iowa, from a place called Loras College. People have heard of it. It's a great little school. I'm on the board there right now. And then, of course, Mount St. Mary's Seminary. So all those things. But I would say, ask me, what's the most important thing I've had in my life? I'd say my family, and particularly my parents. Frankly, you can't duplicate how good they were. They were great. You have a great family. You have great parents. You know what I'm talking about. It's a great gift to have those things in your life. It's spiritual to do things for others.
And those values have stayed with you. Now, before we go into that, you were also an active tennis player, both in high school and college, and still play for fun, I understand.
That's true. I played in high school. Well, you know, I grew up in Bethesda. A lot of country clubs around there. We'd have a country club. We had a local pool of tennis courts. But we were in both sports, swimming against Congressional or Kenwood or Manor Club or Washington Gulf Country Club. We always did great in both swimming and tennis because we're so geared into those. So, yeah, so tennis has been a great gift to me. And I still enjoy now playing for fun of it. I've lost a lot of my speed, my reflexes, my eye hand, but still love it. Still love it.
That's wonderful. Now, Father John, at what point in life did you decide that you want to become a priest?
It's interesting, when I was young, maybe 7, 8 years old, I think my class of 75 boys and 75 girls was a big group of kids in that group, right? The baby boom year, born in 47. So basically, I'd say if there were 75 boys, I'd say 40 of them, 40, I'll be a priest someday.
Wow.
But it's because of the example of the priests and basically, and the religious upbringing and the faith aspect. Now, I think that's true across the board for young people. I would have to admit that basically by the time they were in high school, it was probably down to maybe possibly 5 or 10. And even myself, when I got to high school, it was still in my mind. It would go away. And one thing I did basically, it probably helped, was I took 4 years of Latin. Just in case that was not required, I took 2 were required. And that was a great move on my part because why did Latin's not been a big need for me as a priest? But that was when I began to realize this is something I want to do. In college, I was pretty quiet about myself. But then she just realized, it's like you're running from God. That's probably a little dramatic, but he wants an answer. And the answer was, for my case, was not going to be married and have kids. My answer was going to be serve him as a priest. And I'll tell you, it's 48 years this year. And it has been the greatest life possible. The giving and the sharing and the participation in people's lives, whether it be from baptism or from a funeral, is the greatest life. And so I feel very blessed to have found this out when I was pretty young. You're very young, but bring it to conclusion when I was in college and seminary. And then I've had really 48 years of service to people. And it's a great gift. I love what I do. I have passion for the priesthood, a passion for faith, a passion for letting God's word shine forth, and do that as the individual who just does his best, and you will be a successful priest.
What a beautiful example, Father John. I know you are dedicated to serving needs of the most vulnerable in our community, and your example is also an example of leadership. Part of what I talk about in terms of leadership is that the most important aspect of leadership is leading by example. And it's obvious that the priests that you had as role models early on in life with family support, your father, your mother, were the kind of people that you wanted to emulate. You saw them as role models. So that energized you to find your passion, which is serving God, serving the community, and having an impact because they served as good role models for you.
Exactly. And I can remember, I probably was 4th or 5th grade, and one of the priests, Father O'Donnell, came out to play football with us on the playground. It was a man, we're kids, we're 10-year-olds, and he threw probably a 40-yard pass. And I remember catching that pass, and it's a small thing. It's a real guy. He's not some nerdy, holy Joe. He can throw a football and throw it far. That kind of thing did impact me. It was a natural thing for me not to say, well, I'll go to some holy place and become a seminarian or priest. No, I'd like to bring all those gifts I learned from others, the priests you just mentioned, and let those examples make me a better priest myself. So you're exactly right. Role models are huge. You live up to your potential. People can see that you are passionate, committed, and serving in ways maybe hasn't been discussed by others.
And that's wonderful that then 1973, you were ordained a priest for the Archdiocese right here in Washington, D.C.
Yes. So a couple of things happened. First of all, during college, I said, Dad, Mom, I think I want to go to seminary. And we had a nice discussion and we linked up with a vocation director the way we worked that. We did that. And then basically, 4 years later, I was ordained a priest. But in the meantime, my dad, would say 13, became what's called a deacon. And these were people who the early church appointed 7 deacons to work in community, the Greek-speaking deacons, to work with mostly orphans and widows. So basically, my dad, maybe for the first time in modern history, a father priest of his son's first mass. Because deacons and priests can preach, the laity can talk, but not the homily. And he gave the homily at my first mass. And he said something, I just always remember this. it's came back to me that he sent to me during the holiday. He said, you know, John, 25 years ago, we brought you to this church for baptism. And war was poor, and it went fine. And then he said, I took you up to the altar, presented you to God, and said, God, you want this boy, he's yours. He said, most fathers do that. And that's not true. Most often not do that. That's a nice thing. But he was great. That's a scenario where you might be, why don't you do it? And then basically he said, we've never told that story. Talk to us ordained. We're going to have no influence at all upon what God wanted for you. So that was a gift. They knew that for 25 years. I didn't know that. And I'm not saying how it happened, but they thought that would be a blessing to a priest and a family. And it certainly got rubbed off on me. Another story I would tell my father, because it does affect my giving other people. We were going to church one day when I was 10 years old, 9 years old. And we walk out of our home. It's about 6-7 blocks from the church, 6:30 in the morning. We go take the car. I got in the car. My sister got in the car with me. And the guy's walking down the street. He was actually African American. And my dad sees him. And it was not that used of somebody black working in our community. So he stopped to talk to him. And I watched from the inside the car. He just watched. Within 3 minutes, my dad takes his coat off. Of his back, and gave to that guy. And he walked down the street. Dad went back in the house, he got enough jet, got another coat. Gets in the car. I said, Dad, what happened? What'd you do that? He says, well, he was cold. But Dad, you gave your coat. He was cold. No need for discussion. He was cold. That's what you do. I don't really know, Mahan, if that was something he did, as you said, as a role model. I don't think so. He just did. That's who he was. But still, that impacted me. And I got to count the charities. I realized I'm living out the legacy my father taught me. Give and you share and you help. And that's what you do in your life. If you do that, frankly, your life will never be anything but great.
What a beautiful example, Father John, because it's not the fact that someone does it because they want to be a role model.
Right.
It's the values they have show what is important and serve as a model. So your father behaved according to his values, his beliefs, his principles, which served as a role model for you as you continue to serve the community. Now, it must have also been a tremendous honor to become a Monsignor and be named one by Pope John Paul II in 1985.
I've got some experience about Monsignors. I mean, I have one, so. First of all, you notice I don't use that name very much. I don't use Monsignor. It's pretty formal to me. But I worry about this, Mahan. So I know a lot of great priests were not Monsignors. And what made me different? Not I was more skilled. Not that I was more experienced. It was that I was in a place where people could see my ministry. So the cardinal office could see it. So I worked in youth ministry, CYO, I worked on things. They could see it. And so basically, I believe that all priests are good. Some maybe should become Monsignor, but not all of us. And that's, it's fine with me. The Pope recently, Pope Francis changed that a little bit. He said maybe 5-6 years ago, no more Monsignors, except for people who have had long service to church. So maybe I'm the age group now where in this plan, I'd be made a Monsignor because I'm an older, near retirement type of priest, but no longer these young guys becoming Monsignors. Move up the ladder. If you've been so successful 30, 40 years, let's honor you that. There's no agenda there. It's just basically you'll be honored. It doesn't mean you become a bishop someday. It doesn't mean you become a pope someday. It means basically that you've done good work and we'll honor that and celebrate that with people present. So I love the title, but I also think my buddies who aren't Monsignors are better or good as I am. So I don't emphasize that at all. It's nice to have. You know what I do use it? I'm trying to get somebody to do something for me. This is more in church circle. So I'm trying to get somebody married, outside the church or whatever. Then I'll find my two. Fair enough. I do use it, but not for all.
It is wonderful because you have that genuine humility to you, which is why you go by Father John and use the Monsignor when it serves the people, which you look to serve and have done such a great job, including Monsignor with the fact that you helped establish Shepherd Foundation and Potomac Community Resources that have had a significant impact for more than a quarter century in the greater Washington, D.C. region.
Yeah, I give a lot of credit here to my buddies, my friends. Most of them are not priests, these are married people. The Shepherd Foundation started with basically about 10 of us in one of my friend's houses. And we're over there and what do we do about kids who can't afford education, can't school, want to go there? And we all agreed, TEPS agreed, to give $1,000 each yourself. And they tried to find 9 people to join us. We put $100,000. The first year, we didn't get that. We got $60,000. But after that first year, it took off. And so we're now receiving $400,000 a year. We give it all out again to people. And so that was, I see people all the time who have benefited from those. And the Kentucky Resources happened because a woman in the parish, her husband came to me and said, "Father John, there's no one helping us. We have a daughter, but double differences. And no one's helping us." And even when I programs now, she mentioned it. Kenny schools, that's a different place. What about people in the parish? And that was a 4 or 5 other couples who had children with a dependence with disability. And it began, it's done great work now. For Steve Brown is president, executive director now for 25 years. It's been great.
And it is wonderful because you continued your impact. And also in July 2011, you were named then to become president and CEO of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Washington, which reaches over 100,000 people in the DMV region and supports them on an annual basis. So a significant organization with significant impact, significant leadership opportunities, and significant challenges at the same time.
Some numbers for you. So across the whole country, Catholic Charities USA spends $4.4 billion to help about 10 million people a year, actually 12 million people a year now. We're a piece of that. We're the small. So we actually now up to 200,000 people with COVID. Things changed. We picked up 75,000 to 80,000 people come to us now than they did a year ago. Most for food, things like that. We have 900 employees. We have 7,000 volunteers. And our budget's a little over $100 million. So basically, I had no idea when I said yes to this job. I mean, literally, I said yes to a job. I knew what it was. I had no idea. I knew I loved charity. I knew I loved helping people. I had not an inkling that it would be. I mean, when I first read 900 employees, what? 900 employees? $100 million budget. I know a parish budget would be $5 million. It's a school, maybe $8 million. Just anywhere. And we are the most comprehensive social aid to Washington area. Meaning basically, you come to us for whatever it is. You come to us for housing, you might get a job. You come to us for healthcare, you might get food. You come to us for family issues, and you might basically be able to get the job. Whatever. So it's back and forth. So we're very proud of the fact that we're large and we're efficient, and we keep getting more assistance for the people because they want to help us do the work, which we do.
And Father John, it takes leadership and organizational skills at the same time to serve the most vulnerable in the community. You also have to be a great fundraiser, which you have proved to be. You raised over $100 million in the Archdiocese Washington Forward in Faith campaign to be able to do some of the good work that the Archdiocese does.
That's right. So basically, I learned a lesson years ago I was at Little Flower. And he said, "John, I want to do a collection for youth. I work with youth a lot. You know, I have retreats and picnics and sometimes dances, all kinds of good stuff for kids, wholesome stuff for kids." And a group pretty much like 400 or 500 kids were coming these past 400 or 500 on a weekly basis or monthly basis, come a lot of kids. So he said, "I want to do a collection for you to help you out. So pick August, so month. We'll do an envelope, send it out, or write a letter." And the letter went out to the whole parish in Bethesda and came back basically with about, maybe $3,000, $4,000. And I then did something. My handwriting shows it now. I did something. I wrote everybody a thank you note for $5 or $1 or $100, whatever. First thing ever happened. Somebody said, "I never got a thank you in my life for the collection against it. So here's another $100. So that difference. Thank you notes count. That next year, it went up to $6,000. And I said, why don't we have the little children, the little ones, just for CYO thing. Let's let them write a note. So you can imagine a note with me writing, "Dear Mr. Smith, thank you for the basketballs. I love playing basketball, Jimmy. $10,000 next year, $10,000. And so it's a simple lesson. Say thank you. Let people know you appreciate it. And you're not the only charity in town. And people respond. And that's worked for me now for 48 years. It's great.
It has. And that's why you channel so much of the energy in the community, again, to serving the community that needs to be served the most. Now, I also know that you wanted to start a daycare center for the homeless at St. Patrick's and couldn't make that happen. What happened with that?
Well, no bad feelings about this, but the city approached me And the city said, we need downtown Bay Center, which is so, where these people, number one, they had no restrooms. Imagine walking around with no restroom. And two, they had basically they had no showers. So we were going to take the first two floors of my headquarters, which is at right 10th and J, across from Martin Luther King Library. It's a great location. And the city said, well, A, for you to have office space nearby. And the two floors were going to be turned into showers and day programs and other things they needed. But the local pastor there, good guy, friend of mine, I get it. He just said, John, I can't do this. It's my parish. And I went to Archbishop about it. Before that, I even said that first speech. Listen, if the local pastor doesn't think it's a good idea, I won't have it. Since then, there are two new pastors. If I pull off now, they get back to me again because this was more openness, but it was fine. But it didn't happen. And then you realize, okay, I did my best. It wasn't going to happen. That's okay. It's okay. Basically, we created some other synergy someplace else. So it's fine. But I've been a dream full at all. It's a real dream. Imagine a center in the center of our city, a really competent day center, showers, and two hot meals, not three, and job training and mental health training and everything we had there, legal work, things like that. But we went a lot of we lost out. That's okay. We went a lot and we went. So it's good.
It is, and it's having that vision and continually going after it, different ways, getting people engaged, and sometimes there are setbacks. And oftentimes there are many successes along the way, which is part of why you've been such an impactful leader for 40 plus years. Now, I also know that even an audience with the Pope is such a tremendous honor, but you had the honor of welcoming Pope Francis to Catholic Charities here in 2015.
That was a very special time for us. That was a real gift. Our staff was excited. One part of that was interesting. They wanted me to do something special in terms of Catholic Charities to give the Pope some understanding. So they said, let's do some pledges. We'll do some cash service. And I said, can you get some? I'll get 10,000 people to pledge, 10,000. They said, that's the best you can do. I said, oh, jeez. Okay, I said, okay, I'll be 25,000. That's it. Fine. So I'll tell you what, I'll get 100,000 people to commit to this. Should be able to do it. And we worked there for 3 or 4 months. And the amazing thing is, the day the Pope arrived in Washington that morning, that at 2 o'clock in the morning that day, I went over 100,000. It was quite smack on the money. And we got next to 800 people the last day or whatever. But then I had to walk out and he was supposed to do a prayer. He didn't want to do a prayer. He said, no, he wanted to do the crowd. So he walked out. He got right among the crowd. It was just a charismatic person. And people loved it. So basically, but that's probably the highlight of my priesthood, if you will. Something that's really different, special. The priest can say they invited the Pope to your house. And we did. And it went great. The other thing about that, Sarah, he would normally would have gone to on the Hill, to a big dinner, a leadership dinner with congressmen and senators. He didn't want to do that. So I'm going to have dinner with the homeless people. And he had those little Fiats he was driving in. There wasn't that big limousine. Fiat. Again, you mentioned earlier, his example, his role model, his reminder that it's not about a lot of hoopla, it's about service. That's his message. He delivers it so well, not by words, but mostly by his personality and by his action. He put in showers. He put in showers over the Vatican. He put showers over there. Well, the portico is now a place to get showers. Great stuff.
What a magnificent leader, again, showing that leadership is example, and he is setting the example for how he wants his flock to behave and how they need to lead. Now, I also know you're very involved in different interfaith networks in the greater Washington, D.C. region. What have been some of the perspectives or successes as you have interfaith conversations in trying to support the most vulnerable in our community?
One of our strategic goals, core values, is we work with other religious sponsored groups to bring about success and service. So there's the Lutheran social services, there's Jewish social services, Methodist social services, there's House of Ruth, so others may eat, DC Central Kitchen, all these things. And basically, we realize that people fall through the cracks. The sad thing is that anybody's homeless, many of them are really genius and they're creative. So what can happen is they can take all the services of those groups just mentioned and tap into those, someone who's maybe homebound, someone who's maybe not as quite savvy or consistent, left behind. So what we could do together is try to make sure we communicate, talk, and share to try to make sure that no one is left out of the game. And we can't for everybody. We know that, but we basically all work together, a big difference. I did ask one of my friends, I said to him, would you help me do this? Would you write a check? So I write a check to a bunch of us and write a check maybe for $10 million. But that would be given to a board who would insist or at least cajole all of us to work together. If you want some of that $10 million to come into your program, you'll work with us. It's been hard because, and why is it hard? We're all sitting here busy. Why is it hard? Because we're all working hard. And basically, I have a lot of time to go to a new meeting for another group. Most of us don't. So we need somebody to lead the way. The other thing that happens, it's interesting. If I make that lead call, you know what the guy, everybody thinks, what's John up to now? What's he up to now? It's not jealousy. It's just like, what's his idea? So I think it's from the outside. You could be that board chair, and then we could do some stuff together. And we need to do that. People should not be falling through cracks without housing, whatever. We can make a difference.
It is, and it is interesting that sometimes we become territorial with respect to the groups that we serve rather than, in some instances, coming together to have even a greater impact, which is a big part of what you have been after, Father John. A lot of the people that I know, respect, love, and admire have tremendous respect, love, and admiration for you, including John Vemire. He talks about your leadership and how impactful your leadership is. Now, one of the things I was surprised with respect to your leadership is that you said, learning to say yes in my ministry defines who I am. What do you mean by that? And how does that define who you are, learning to say yes? And how does it help you be a better leader and impact more lives?
You know, this might sound a little negative, but some of my brother priests, their first answer out of their mouth is oftentimes, most times, no. So I come and say, can I do something here? We had pastor recently, we went to do a program here at your parish and serve food. We paid for it. We'd serve it. He said, no. I was like, I can't believe you said no. Well, why would you say yes to your people? So I came up with an idea many years ago that the important word I can say is yes. And so if you ask me to do something for you, I'm going to say yes if I can. And by the way, that just played out. I asked a young couple to be the chair of our sisters and brothers, chair of our gala next year. And the young man said, I got to say yes, don't I? I said, yeah. And I said, yeah, I got to say yes. Yeah, you should. So anyway, so it defines basically who I am, because I don't see many no's. And no's to me are more painful than yes. Yes requires some extra work sometimes, but a no means somebody's really disappointed and really feels like not that important. But I don't like that. I want to say yes once I can. And there's very few things I can say yes to. There's very few things I can't try. And it may be what I call qualified yes. So he comes in for adoption, we don't adopt services anymore. I say, we don't have that, but I can get you someplace in Baltimore or the Parker Foundation. So the yes is always perfect here. We've got to surround it, but it's like, we don't have it, but we're going to steer it towards. But it defines who I am. That probably my tombstone, but it will be. Basically, you always try to say yes. And as priesthood, really changed others because that yes was always there for us. I believe it, and I try to live it.
It is a beautiful way to think about it and to serve, Father John. Now, I know you're involved in a lot of different organizations, serve on a lot of different boards. One institution that is close to my heart because it had a significant impact on me is Georgetown University. And part of the reason it was really impactful, Father John, for me is that I went there for business school and there was such a heavy emphasis on ethics. Now, a lot of the students didn't like that. They wanted us to move up a couple on the rankings. And to do that, you have to put a little bit more finance or more marketing. And Georgetown was pretty tough on sticking with no, ethics is going to be a core part of this program. So you're associated with Georgetown and you serve on the initiative on Catholic social thought and public life. What is that all about and what are you trying to achieve there?
Very good friend of mine named John Carr, who was the founder of that, put six, seven of us together. He used to work for the U.S. Catholic Conference. He was working with social justice issues for the Bishops' Conference. And not an easy job, because in that job, you've got a lot of different ideas from bishops and try to pull like herding cats to get them all in the same direction. So came time, maybe it's 65 or whatever, it's a step down. And basically began this process. And we always find some resources, some money. And during COVID, it's become super successful because many of us, once every other week or so, are on some kind of a call, a Zoom call, and you've got a great panel, and it's lots about ethics. It's about what values do you have? What is your character? What are the things that basically mean a lot to you? And that those, it's one of the, actually President Obama came one year. He spoke as part of a panel. They don't have to be called president part of the panel. The president gave a speech. How many of a president is part of the month? Six other people talk. People like David Brooks and Mike Gerson and just great individuals come, and many women to go see it. And now we have this, I found another one who helps out with it as well. So basically, it's just, I think, raise our consciousness to the fact that there's a whole, we have to get our theology and our philosophy grounded so when people ask, they get support. And so that's the nice thing that's going on. And I think we've got it now, and not just me, but others, to a point now where we turn the corner and the finances are less of a, there's still always be money, but it's not quite mouth to mouth. It's going pretty well.
And it is great work. And as you said, and I truly believe the ethics, which is core to the thinking, is really important for leaders all across industries and sectors. It's number one, two, and three most important for all of us to keep in mind. Now, Father John, you have had a significant impact all throughout your service to the community. When you're asked for leadership thoughts, leadership resources, where do you send people? What do you find as something that serves in terms of guidance for leadership for you? And what do you recommend for others on leadership?
I have to admit, I don't have any particular books or particular method doing it. But I think what I want to have happen is if someone wants to become a leader, I try to put in touch with a leader. So if I get to be an internship with one, or maybe so the leader becomes kind of, that's the lesson. I think of President George and Jack DeJoy, school called Don Bosco, Christopher Ray, on 204. Every child there is given a chance to have a job. And basically that job will allow them to pay for their tuition. And every child so far now is going to college, except from college. But what did Jack do? He used a job team of four people. Jack gave us, I think it's four job teams. They have to pay for that. And they put one youngster in philosophy at one youngster in business school. And these young people were seeing great university. And they were working in that office one day. It's part of the school year. And they worked there. And they got a chance to be, if you will, rub shoulders with wonderful people, men and women and young people. So I think for me, it's find the right role models and get people to say yes to that. And then let that by osmosis. You can say, this is what I'm working to. There's a story by a young girl named Jasmine. My assistant, Christy, who works with me, Christy, just had a baby. Her daughter's now seven, so 7 years ago. And Jasmine was at our class at Don Bosco, and she basically needed a job. I said, okay, come be my assistant. She's 17. Come be my assistant. Just for summertime. But man, she said, I grew so much then, child. She said, that was scared to death every day. You were scared. And so we're always smiling. So that was free to make a mistake. Imagine what she grew. And she gave a talk at one of our events, and the president of a college nearby said, you have a full year scholarship right now. I want you at my school. Full year scholarship. And she was special when she was a kid, who I think also had role models and is now a role model herself for the other young people. But yeah, I want to say yes, I think that's an important leadership position. I believe strongly in what I call servant leadership. You lead by service. When I was working youth ministry and we're having these big, not huge, but dance for 500 kids, I was always mopping up the floor. I was always cleaning up the floor. And the kids would join in with me, but I wasn't going to say, go do that. No, I did it myself and they joined in. Those are lessons, I think, that the kids take with them and jump in events. That's what you want to do. And it makes a big difference.
Those are wonderful lessons, Father John. And actually, one of the reasons that I really enjoy this podcast and sharing conversations with magnificent leaders like you is that it gives people a chance for half an hour, 45 minutes to spend some time with role models like yourself, people that have truly embraced a mindset of serving others, doing it well, and having an impact as a result. So the mindset and the desire is important, but you need to be able to do it effectively, as you did even with the fundraising that serves the community. So intentions are important, but being able to lead and get other people to come along with you is just as important, which is why I truly appreciate you taking this time to share some of your leadership experience with the Partnering Leadership community. Thank you so much, Monsignor John Ensler.
And I'm honored to do this, and I hope that you'll call on me if it helps in any way to help the next generation grow up as leaders who can make a big impact for our community. We need them, and that can seem come to their own. So let's tap into those sources and let's put to the work.
Thank you, Father John.
You've been listening to Partnering Leadership with your host, Mahan Tavakoli. For additional leadership insights and bonus content, visit us at partneringleadership.com.